We spoke about the topic of in mazal leYisrael. That means there's no such thing as fate in the stars for the Jews. Astrology does not dictate the future of a Jew. There is no horoscope for a Jew. Though it is true that the fate of every non-Jew is found in the stars. And one who is an astronomer, who can really read the stars, or rather an astrologer, who can read the fate of the stars, could foretell the future of a person, but only of a non-Jew. This we stated as a machloket debate in the Gemara. But the Gemara tells us that most rabbis agree to the fact that there is no mazal, it tells astrologer. Going in there, Avlet said to Shmuel, he pointed out one man and said, I see that this person who's going into the swamp will not come out alive. A snake is going to strike him and he will die. This I see as his fate in the stars. Shmuel answered, I cannot tell from here, but I say that if he is a Jew, then he will return alive, because you cannot foretell the fate of a Jew in the stars. Whatever you see in the stars can be undone by tefillah, by prayer. They sat there and waited. Sometime later, they returned. And Avlet was shocked, this non-Jewish astrologer. He got up, he walked over to this man and said, let me see that pack you're carrying, load of wood. And he moved aside one board and he found there a snake that was sliced in half. So he said, here's proof that I was right. This man was fated to be killed by a snake. Instead, the snake was killed. Shmuel asked this man, tell me, what did you do today? You were saved by some miracle from death. What did you do? The man said, well, every day we go out in a group and we pass a can around where each one puts inside a portion of a meal. And then when it comes time to eat, we each draw out a portion. There was one among us who did not bring any food today. He would have been very much embarrassed publicly. So I said, let me go around and collect these portions. When I came to this man, I pretended to take this portion from him. I actually took an additional portion I had, put it in for his sake. I saved him from embarrassment, and he had food to eat. Shmuel said, you have performed a great mitzvah. This is a mitzvah of tzedakah. Therefore, we see from here, the pasuk says, tzedakah tatzil mimevet. Tzedakah saves a person from death. Now, the Gemara says elsewhere that this pasuk, stated by King Solomon, tzedakah saves a person from death, we see people give tzedakah and they die. So how can you say that the person gives tzedakah is saved from death? This means a person would live forever if he gives tzedakah. The Gemara answers, of course a person has to die, but tzedakah definitely saves a person from a horrible, a violent death. Here, Shmuel said, you have gone even beyond that, because not only were you saved from a violent death of the serpent, you even came out alive and timely. You didn't even die a natural death. And this shows how great is the power of tzedakah, that not only, as the Gemara says there, can it save a person from violent death, it can even save a person from a natural death at times. In this case, we see that this person was saved from death through tzedakah. But Shmuel brought out the point. Again, this proves that though the stars may dictate something about a Jew, it does not mean that it must come to pass. A Jew can change his fate two ways, either through tefillah, through prayer, or through tzedakah. Now the Gemara adds, another rabbi says the same thing. This time it is Rabbi Akiva. one of the greatest, perhaps the greatest of all the rabbis of the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva was the rabbi of two of the most famous rabbis in existence, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal and Rabbi Meir, whom we'll discuss later. Rabbi Akiva was once told by astrologers that his daughter will die on the night of her wedding, in the night of her chuppah. Rabbi Akiva was very worried over this, very concerned, and he took this to heart. But if he really believed this so strongly, he would have stopped his daughter from going through with the marriage. He had bitachon, he had faith in Hashem that somehow she would be saved. How, he did not know. He went through with the wedding plans, preparation. Then he sat in a private room praying for her well-being that night. In the morning, she came into him carrying a long needle, long pin, and not noticing that attached to this pin was a snake. It had gone through a snake. Because she had unwittingly stuck the pin into a piece of wood, and then when she pulled it out, she had stuck it through the snake, killed the snake, and pulled it out with the snake trailing behind her. She walked into the room. Rabbi Akiva saw her. She said, "It's a miracle. She's still alive. It's after the night of the wedding. She's alive, and there is a dead snake trailing after her." He asked her, "What did you do? You must have done something to deserve being saved." She said, "Well, in the evening at the time of the wedding, a poor man came to the door. He was very hungry. He asked for food. And no one paid any attention to him. They were all occupied with the wedding feast. No one listened to him at all. I took my portion, my special portion of food that you had given me yourself." Apparently, Akiva had served his own daughter, because this is bride as a queen at the wedding night. "The portion you had served me, I took it and I gave to him." And Akiva got up and he said, "You have performed the mitzvah. And again, I see from here, tzedakah tatzil mimevet. Tzedakah saves a person from death, not only from violent death, but also from a natural death." Now from here we can derive a little more clearly the reason why, after all, the Gemara does make that, does point out the fact that the statement is questionable. How can tzedakah save from death when we see people give charity and they remain alive? And the Gemara answers, this means tzedakah saves from violent death. But we see that if you have those two combined, prayer plus tzedakah, tefillah and tzedakah, then a person is saved not only from violent death, but also from a regular death. The tefillah of Rabbi Akiva plus her tzedakah that she gave saved her completely, entirely. And again, Rabbi Akiva said, this proves, too, that there is no mazal for a Jew. Because all the astrologers stated definitely that her fate was, according to the stars, she was going to die. She would not live through that night. She came out alive, proving that there's no such thing as stars dictating a Jew's fate. A Jew's fate can be changed through the power of tefillah and tzedakah. Third case was Rabbi Nachman ben Yitzchak. When he was born, his mother was told by the stargazers, "Your son is born under a star that will make him a thief. His fate is to be a thief." Question was, what could she do to change this? She decided. The Gemara says that a Jew should never walk bareheaded. Should always have his head covered with a hat, with a yarmulke, kippah. Why? Because, and this has nothing to do with Ashkenaz or Sfad, because the symbol of belief and fear in Hashem is the head covered. It shows that you believe there is a power, a supreme power above you. Removing that covering shows that there's a freedom. You have removed the fear of the spirit of Hashem over you. So therefore, she said, let me increase that power of fear of Hashem by having him always wear not just a yarmulke, but a hat over the yarmulke, double covering. This way he will be so filled with fear of Hashem, he will not be drawn into his fate of being a thief. In addition, she said to him, pray. Always pray to Hashem that you should be saved from the evil of theft. He never knew why she told him this. He didn't know the fact that the stargazers had told her he'd be a thief. One day he was sitting, studying Torah under a tree, and while studying, his hat fell off. He raised his eyes and he saw a bunch of dates hanging there, and he got the urge so strongly to steal those. This was somebody else's tree. The urge became so strong that he was forced to climb up to reach out for the dates in order to control himself, to control his desire. When a person grits his teeth, that's strengthening yourself in battle. He gritted his teeth and it still wasn't enough, so he took the branch in his teeth and he bit it. He snapped the branch with his teeth. This way he broke the power of this urge. He was saved from stealing these grapes. It shows that his fate was to be a thief, and yet he was saved. It was through his tefillah he was given this additional power to overcome this urge, and through the fact that in covering his head constantly, he was filled with this Yirat Shemayim. What made him battle this urge? Because he had this Yirat Shemayim. What gave him the Yirat Shemayim? Fear of Hashem, the fact that his head was covered. This is Gemara. This and other places in Gemara we find definite statements about the mitzvah of a Jew keeping his head covered as a sign of accepting the reign of Hashem over him. That Hashem is the ruler, and his fear and awe of Hashem are complete, are constant. That's why nobody should be misled into thinking that the head covering of a yarmulke or a hat is chassidut, belongs to one sect and not to the other. So every Jew, Ashkenaz, Sfarad, any kind, are included. Certainly, there is a mitzvah in keeping your head covered, and certainly there's a lack of credit for a person who has his head uncovered. In order to avoid any evil fate that may be in store for a person, know then that there is an out, there is a solution. And that is tefillah, tzedakah. We have yirat Hashem, fear of Hashem. We are zocheh to that, and we are assured that our fate will be one dictated by Hashem, which means one of kindness, goodness, and long life. The Gemara says, one of the rabbis of the Gemara stated, it is known before Hashem that in the generation of Rabbi Meir, who was one of the top students of Rabbi Akiva, it is known his generation there was no one like him in greatness in Torah. In fact, Rabbi Akiva said it to Rabbi Meir. He said, you are the top rabbi of this generation. You will take over. Rabbi Shimon ben Yechayezal, by the way, who was sitting there, asked Rabbi Akiva, what about me? Rabbi Akiva answered, your greatness is unknown to people. Yours cannot be even spoken of. Only heaven knows that. Here the Gemara says that in the generation of Meir, there was no one like him. The question the Gemara asks in that case, how come that whenever there's a debate between Rabbi Meir and other rabbis, the law is always like the other rabbi? If he is greater, definitely greater, how come in any debate of law that he doesn't win out? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was a student. The law is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. The law is like Rabbi Yossi. In all cases, practically all, the law is not like Rabbi Meir. How come if he was so great that he enlightened all of the rabbis and taught that? The answer is, the Gemara says that the other rabbis could not understand his words clearly. They could not arrive at a conclusion because he was so sharp, he had so sharp a mind, that in any question about an item to discuss whether this thing was tameh or tahor, it's either one of the two. Is this thing pure or impure? Is it kasher or taref? Each item he would show the deepest logic, the deepest reasoning to prove that this thing is kasher, and then using the same logic and reasoning he'd prove conclusively it is taref. It's tameh, then it's tahor. They could never follow which one of the two was a stronger reasoning. So sharp was he, and therefore they could not reach a conclusion through his words. That's why they were forced to declare the halacha is like one rabbi whose statement is clear, one-sided, and nothing else. The Gemara says his name was not really Rabbi Meir. His name was Rabbi Nehorai, which means also light, but Meir is directly one who gives light, sheds light. Because he enlightened the eyes of the rabbis of the Gemara in halacha, in Hebrew law, therefore he was called with a pseudonym Rabbi Meir. Well, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi means Rabbeinu HaKadosh or Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, once said, the reason that I am sharper in learning, I am more charif than all the other rabbis, is because I saw Rabbi Meir from his back. I saw the back of Rabbi Meir. Therefore, I am sharper. If I had been zoche to see Rabbi Meir from his front, from his face, a facial view, I would have been many times greater than I am now. Just seeing him in the back alone was enough to make me so great. This is one statement here. The Gemara in Yerushalmi explains this statement in detail. One time, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, on a Shabbat, this is what's unusual, on a Shabbat, he celebrated the wedding of his son, Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe. At this wedding, of course, there is singing, there is dancing. Rabbi Yehuda was clapping his hands. When you sing and you dance, you clap your hands. There's a question in Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara, whether you're allowed to clap your hands at Shabbat because it's making noise like a musical instrument. So at that moment, Rabbi Meir came by. He walked in and he said, he cried out, Rabotai, my dear rabbis, has the Shabbat become nullified? Is there no more Shabbat here? Doesn't the Messiah Shabbat exist anymore? Meaning to say you are all being Mechalel Shabbat by clapping hands. Rabbi Yehuda didn't see who it was, and he called out, who dares to come into my place and to dictate to us Hebrew law? You may have heard this. He turned around, he ran, he fled. Rabbi Yehuda could see who it was. He ran after him. And while running, Rabbi Meir's coat, his covering, his hood, fell off from his head. The back of his head, his neck could be seen. The light that emanated from the back of his head, because and it's tzaddik. The Midrash says that a tzaddik is so powerful spiritually that his spirit carries through his body too. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu, they could not look at his face because his face shone with a heavenly light. His body became merged with his soul. And he made it too, the back of his neck shone so with a heavenly light that the Yehuda said, I saw the back of Rabbi Meir. I was so affected, I became so sharp in chokhmah, in wisdom, I was superior to every one of my friends. Had I seen his face, I would have been to a much greater degree in wisdom of Torah. These are the words of Rabbi Yehuda, known as Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Of course, this requires explanation. What is meant by seeing the back, for one thing. Secondly, this story is accepted per se, when actually Tosafot says very clearly, Rabbi Yehuda was the student of Rabbi Meir. He studied in his yeshiva, which means that he sat before him while learning. So surely he saw his face many times. Why does he say here he saw the back of his neck once and never became sharp? One interpretation is that the back means the lesser part. He only understood the lesser part of Rabbi Meir's words, and still he became so sharp. Had he been able to delve into the front, the head part of his words, the deeper section of his words, the hidden, the nistar, the kavanah part of his words, he would become much sharper still. The other interpretation, or the other clear statement, is that Rabbi Yehuda sat at a distance. Those days, the better the student, the closer he sat to the rabbi. At a distance, therefore, he could not see clearly the face. And the Torah tells us, Yeshayahu, the prophet, tells us that if a person wants to study Torah and wants to absorb Torah, to really absorb the words of Torah is impossible, no matter how closely he listens. You cannot really learn Torah unless you look at the face of the rabbi who's speaking. You must learn Torah with your eyes and not with your ears. And therefore, the Rabbeinu HaKadosh said, because I could not see B'nai's face clearly as much as I tried, I was sitting too far back, therefore I gained a degree of wisdom that was still higher than all my friends who were not zochet to study in his yeshiva. Had I sat closer still, I would have been able to look at his face during the learning of Torah. I would have gained a much greater percentage of the Torah wisdom that he imparted. This teaches us that the as a pasuk chokhmat adam ta'ir panav, the wisdom of a person shines forward through his face. Your eyes should see your teacher when he teaches, and then you'll be able to receive the words clearly, clearly being able to understand them clearly, to absorb them, and to delve into them with a much greater depth than if you just hear the words. Now, it's interesting to note, very much so, that according to certain mefarashim, like Rashi HaKadosh says that the words of the Gemara here should be not Rebbe said this, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, but Rav. Rav was the rabbi who made this statement. The reason I am sharper than my friends is because I saw Rabbi Meir in the back. Had I seen him, had I seen his face more closely, I would have been much greater. These are the words of Rav. Rashi HaKadosh says this, and there are certain other mefarashim who later come, we won't mention names, who are astounded at the words of Rashi HaKadosh. How could Rashi HaKadosh make this statement when in the Yerushalmi the story of this statement is with Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Yehuda HaNasi, who said this? However, Tosafot the Menachot says that though there is this story that took place with Rabbeinu HaKadosh, obviously Rav made the same statement. because Rav lived that long, he was able to see Rabbi Meir, therefore he too could have made the same statement. Now, let's analyze this whole item. We once mentioned, it is brought that, who was Rav really? Rav was Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba was the chief student of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. He is the author of the words of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. Rabbi Abba wrote the Zohar Kadosh. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal spoke and he wrote down his sayings in the Zohar Kadosh. He was the greatest student of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, which means that he lived in the time of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, and he lived much later on, in the time of Rabbi Yochanan, the Ish Lakish. Now, Rav lived for a period of 400 years, dating back to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, dating back to Rabbi Meir. And therefore, Rav could have said this statement. There's no question now as to how it could have been said then, because he lived that long. However, the question now would be, if Rav was Zocher to be the chief student of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, why wouldn't he say, the reason I'm better than the others is because I am the top student of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. I saw the face of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal constantly. I sat right in front of him. In fact, the Zohar HaKadosh tells us that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, the time of the Idrei Kadisha, the holiest moment, said that only Rabbi Abba shall sit directly in front of him to take down his statements, his words, and write them down. So Rabbi Abba was the closest to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, next to his son, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, who stayed with him in the cave for 13 years. So surely he could have said, the reason I am great is because I was close to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. I saw his face constantly. What would seem to be the answer is that Rav made this statement about all his friends. The reason I'm greater than my friends is we were all students of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. We were all great. But he says the reason I'm sharper, I have a sharper mind, is because I was able to learn from Rabbi Meir, whose words were so sharp that the rabbis of the Yemenite couldn't even understand him fully. And therefore, in sharpness of mind, I gained a degree that was above, superior to my friends. As far as greatness, Kiddushah, he had it through Rabbi Shimon Yochai Zal. As far as Harifut, sharpness, he got it through Rabbi Meir. And the Yemenite says that Rabbi Meir had this unusual power of being able to say reasons, logical reasons, to declare an item kasher or tarif. He would give 48 reasons for both sides, for tahara and for tumah. The question, of course, is what is great about giving a reason to say that something is tahor if it's actually tameh? What's so remarkable about that? Is there, as the event itself asks, because the fourth asks, what kind of a sharpness of mind is there for a person to give reasons to show that a thing which is really kasher is taref or vice versa? Since it is not true, what's the greatness in explaining, showing logic for a lie? In this case too, why would we say it's so great or so necessary to have one have a sharpness of mind where he can prove seemingly conclusively that a point is tarif when it's the opposite? The Mefarshim explained that one of the items mentioned about Rabbi Meir, or one of the students, an old student in the city of Yavne, who showed that a rodent we know is a tameh being. This student was able to prove that a rodent is tahor, and he gave 150 reasons for it, showing the rodent is tahor. The Torah says a rodent is tameh. He was able to give 150 reasons to prove that it is tahor. The question is now, what's so great about proving something which is wrong? It's against the Torah. There is a an explanation for the Mefarashim. The Gemara says that when they had to elect Sanhedrin, the 70 chief rabbis of the Sanhedrin, they had to possess an unusual amount of knowledge. They had to know certain languages, they had to know magic and so on. They also had to know how to purify a rodent, find proof that a rodent is tahor. Why? Again, what has this got to do with Sanhedrin? Here we can have the answer. The Gemara says that the Sanhedrin are ones who judge cases of life and death, death sentence. Now, if a person comes on trial, comes to a trial, and the Sanhedrin judges case, we follow the majority of the Sanhedrin. This is the Supreme Court, sort of. We take account, a tally of the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin. Majority say he is innocent, he goes free. Majority say he's guilty, then of course he gets a death penalty. But in order to give him a death penalty, we need a majority of two. You must have a majority with at least two more say he is guilty than those who say he's innocent. If you have only one more saying guilty, the person is not considered guilty. Majority must be a majority of two. If you have a majority of one saying that he is innocent, he goes free, naturally. Now, the Gemara tells us that if you have every one of the Sanhedrin unanimously vote this person being guilty, not a majority, but all say he's guilty, the man goes free. This question is brought up, why? Many Mefarshim ask why this is so. Here we can understand the reason why. Mashal, let us say that the Sanhedrin all say he's guilty. The reason is because they didn't delve into, they all say he is 100% guilty. They didn't delve into the case enough to try to save him. They must try to save a person on trial. So therefore, if all say he's guilty, it wasn't a fair trial, he goes free. That might be the reason. However, that reason wouldn't hold true in a case where the Sanhedrin themselves, let's say that they all witness somebody kill someone. Now, there's no question in their mind this was an out-and-out case of murder committed by a person. When this person comes to trial before them, they all state the fact that he is guilty. There's no question whatsoever that this man is guilty. These Sanhedrin know the law too. And if they're all going to say he's guilty, he's going to walk out free. Yet, they can't. One of them cannot lie and say he's innocent. They all witnessed this case. You must have one of these Sanhedrin to show logical proof that Tameh is kasher, to show that a rodent is tahor. Here's a case of an actual rodent where the Torah says he's Tameh, a man who killed, there's no question about it, and yet they show logical reasoning, real reasoning, that this person is tahor. He's not a killer. By doing so, logically, conclusively, he's stating something which is fact, as far as logic is concerned, and by doing so too, you no longer have majority, you no longer have a unanimous vote that the man is guilty. In this case, justice is meted out right. So this person is put to death because this one judge used these powers of logic and reasoning that can change fact, can change a rodent from impure to pure. One of these students of the past generation, the Benazal students of the past generation, said, Freimelzal, said, the interpretation here is very simple. When we say that this great rabbi was able to show proof, what proof? 150 reasons to show proof that a rodent is the worst type of tumah, that a rodent is tahor. What does this mean? Who is the rodent we're speaking about? The rodent is Barminan, a Jew who has fallen into tumah, into sin that is so bad he has fallen in the category of a sheretz, a rodent. Worst type of Jew. What did the Beis Hillel teach? No matter how far you have fallen, if you are now worse than an animal, you're equal to a rodent in Tumah, I can still show you 150 ways to get out. 150 chapters of Tehillim. King David made these chapters. 150 Ta'amim, it's called. Ta'amim is reasons. Ta'amim is the musical songs of King David. 150 chapters of Tehillim. You pour your heart out to these 150 Ta'amim, you'll have 150 reasons to make this worst road become Tahor. Purify the worst Jew through prayer. You can return to Hashem in purity. This is the meaning of the power of Rabbi Meir and his students. Not just for a foolish reason to show logic that is wrong, logic that is false. This power was, and this is the greatest power of it, I think, to be able to take a person who has strayed and wandered so far from the true path, Bar Minan, that he has descended into the lowest depth of Tum'ah, Chas V'Shalom. Still, he can be elevated, raised, and taken out of this worst Tum'ah through this Koach of the Tzaddik. This power of the Tzaddik, in this case, Rabbi Meir, who had this, the students who said that being close to him, they became sharpened. How? Because the greatest chidud, the greatest, the sharpest thing possible, is the sword that can slay the serpent, the real serpent, the Yetzer Hara, the Satan. But Beis Hillel said that the worst poisonous bite of a serpent, of the serpent, the Cheshek Kafuni, the first serpent that existed, who is the Satan himself, the Yetzer Hara himself, the worst bite he can give to a person is the bite of Atzvut, sadness, depressive mind. A person begins to feel sad, lost, he goes into despair, Chas V'Shalom, he feels so badly that there's no more hope for him. This is worse than any other sin possible. The person loses hope. It's Yiyush. And this bite of the serpent, the Rav said, Bnei Kadosh said, being close to this great Tzaddik, Rabbi Meir, who shed light, who gave forth this light to all the rabbis, the greatest light possible, was to put the light on for a person who finds himself in darkness. A person who has fallen into despair, Chas V'Shalom, him and light can be put on to show that there is hope, there is a future for him, there is an elevation, there is purity waiting him through this power of tefillah. This is the greatest light of the Tzaddik. This was the power of Rabbi Meir. Is purity waiting him through this power of tefillah. This is the greatest light of the Tzaddik. This was the power of Rabbi Meir.